Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts on Recovery, broadcasting to you today, as always, from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic Buckhead skyline where there is not a cloud in the sky. It's in the mid to high 80s, which is very pleasant for Atlanta this time of year, particularly with moderate humidity. In fact, we've had an absolutely lovely summer, just a few days that are oppressively hot, but this is the Deep South. And in the Deep South, oppressive heat is the rule rather than the exception. And now today I've got Stacy on the line, and Pam Heil, I think, also is coming. Stacy, how are you?
Hi, Jack. I'm good.
And is Pam, is this you on the line?
It sure is. How are you?
I'm doing very well. This is, just a really interesting time, and I thought a little bit about what happened to Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And the sadness that so many people feel, a lot blaming. And on the other hand, when you mix depression and alcoholism, you get a bad outcome, more often than not. And before we get started, I just want to mention, I put a little post on Facebook last night about the reality of some of this stuff, and of that when somebody commits suicide, they take a temporary problem and provide a permanent solution for it. Mm. And the people that are left behind are shattered, and
yeah,
they are never the same. Never the same. It's there are few things that are as destructive as that, and it makes me very sad. And in my time of sobriety in AA, I had early on two sponsors. One of them was an accountant, and the second was a judge, and both blew their brains out.
Oh, my.
Really?
Yeah. Not
wow.
One, but two. And
wow. How'd that make you feel?
Well, it was shattering. It was like my legs had no strength. It was... it was that same feeling of when Janet Leigh pulled back the shower and she saw the psycho with the knife, just that just kind of a terror. And it was an awful thing. And, both of them had problems with depression and obviously alcoholism, or they wouldn't have been in AA. But,
right,
very, very tough things. At any rate, I just wanted to just kind of mention some of that because it's on my heart, and I put some things up there of substance rather than, well, he's an angel now and just nonsense like that. rest in peace. I don't suspect there's much peace. That doesn't provide the peace that they believe that it will.
No.
And
no,
that is the ultimate sadness. And,
it's a depth of hopelessness.
It's just absolutely, absolutely. Any rate, we were going to talk about tough love and your son and the Mexican jails today.
That's the ultimate tough love.
And I'm just ready to kick in and get going with that. So let's have at it.
Okay. What do you want to know?
I want to know what happened. to begin with, we all saw Shawshank Redemption, and everybody is innocent. Did he maintain that he was innocent of all this stuff, or did he own up to the fact?
No, he did not maintain his innocence.
And what was he never said for?
Drug smuggling.
Drug smuggling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And was it marijuana or cocaine or heroin, both?
Heroin.
Heroin.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have seen him on Breaking Bad with the heroin and the meth guys.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, was when in what part of Mexico was he? If you went north, would it be California or Arizona, New Mexico, or Texas?
He was in Mexico City.
He was in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had to fly there
mm-hmm.
to take care of him and provide him a lawyer. And Mexican jails aren't fun.
I think they're worse than
Parchment in Mississippi. Am I correct?
Well, they probably are, but it's a good thing it wasn't like in some places they would have just killed him. He had never seen the light of day. He wouldn't have even made it to trial. You know, when you're traveling through China and when you're traveling through some countries that don't tolerate stuff like that, if you get caught. I mean, they're horror stories.
Certainly Muslim countries.
Yeah, there are horror stories.
Other than the ones that produce it.
Yeah, there are some that just, you know, they don't even let you chew gum, let alone haul drugs into their country. And if they do, they lock you away. And you know, there are people who've gotten locked away for lesser crimes in different parts of the country, and they never saw the light of day. I believe it was absolutely God-ordained, or he would be dead today. He could have gotten caught anywhere. That wasn't the only place he went. So that's the hard part.
So heroin is made from poppy seeds, which means he was did it originate in Afghanistan?
China, I believe.
China.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I don't know tell you the exact truth, but
we
I think
import
it was
everything
like,
else from China. Why not that?
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it came from China.
I could be wrong. So how long did he do it before he got caught?
Well, you mean how long did I suspect, or how long
yes.
did he, or how long did he actually do it?
How long did he actually do it? What do you think? I mean, you know, we know that drug dealers are a little more truthful than Barack Obama, but not much. So, you know, what do we have on this? How long do you think he was doing it?
Probably about a year and a half.
So he made a lot of money. I mean, if he's being a mule for a year and a half,
mm-hmm.
you know, how many trips did he make, you know?
I don't know, because he'd leave and I'd never see him, so who knows how many trips he made. I know I saw him a lot more after he got caught. But before
and
that,
how did he get caught?
Somebody probably turned him in, and he was at the airport in Mexico, and the you know they stopped for a changeover, but he was going on, and they came and took him off the plane. So more than likely, somebody turned him in.
What year was this?
1992.
Okay, so this has been a quarter century ago.
Yeah.
And they put him in jail, and you were notified. Did he get to call you, or?
Well, I got a call from, who could ever forget a call like that in the middle of the night? And he said, my name is Damian Pico, and I'm I'm at the embassy, at the American Embassy in Mexico City, and your son, I was waiting to say, well, is he dead, or? And so it was. I knew it was either dead or arrested, and he was arrested instead of dead. So I guess that was a good thing.
Right. And
there's still hope when you're alive.
And tell me what happened.
Well, so they arrested him. They took him there, and I guess the guy at the Mexican embassy had to convince him to call me because he wasn't going to call. He was too ashamed. But they convinced him. They said, you're going to need somebody because you're probably not going to survive this without family. And so he went there, and it took like 7 years to get a trial.
7 years to get to trial?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I think of this Marine down there in Mexico now, and my heart goes out for him. And, of course, he was innocent. And,
yeah.
You know, 7 years to go to trial. Now,
yeah.
How old was what's your son's first name?
John.
John. How old was John when this happened?
Like 28.
So he was definitely old enough to know better, and he wasn't just a
kid. He was.
He was just dumb.
He was playing in the fast track downtown. He was doing security for big clubs in Chicago, and you know, so he was fast tracking it then. He was working for the big clubs down there, and somebody courted him and trained him and told him he could make more money than being security in clubs.
Did any of the people that he was involved with get involved with him after he was in jail or once he was in jail?
He
might as well have been dead.
Yeah, he might as well have been dead. He was dead to them. Matter of fact, they're probably the ones who turned him in. And the bad thing about... Well, because he was complaining about them and I think he said, you know, he had so much. I think he was dumb, and he said he had so much information, and I think they turned him in. I think they knew the route he was on. They don't know anything about the big guys. All they know is the mules, and all they do is say, hey, on this airplane, there's this guy. Here's his name. Here's what he's got on him. And what they would do is they would make designer suits with pockets on the inside of the legs and the arms, and they would load it up. So they gave him all the information they needed, and it was all done and said and over.
Once he, and it took seven, why did it take 7 years to go to trial? Because they don't
have
that's
just
normal?
What they do. Yeah, quite normal.
Oh my goodness!
Doesn't
that make you just glad you're American?
Well, I think America has no idea how fortunate they are. I worked for King County Drug Court for like 5 years here in King County, and it was a drug program for all heroin addicts and kids. You know that the judge would sentence them to recovery instead of jail. And those mothers complained, oh, they can get all the drugs they want. And I said, no, they can't. You have no idea how lucky your kids are. You just don't have any idea. Oh, all prisons are all like. I said, no, they're not. If you don't stop your son here, you know, he could be in Mexico, and it's not so fun over there. And drugs run like a river through there.
You know, it's interesting. Over the years in AA, I've led hundreds and hundreds of meetings, and there are always particularly guys, some girls, but mostly guys, that come up with a sheet, and they have to have you sign it that they were there for that meeting,
right.
And because that is used by the courts as a way to kind of straighten them out. And even though I find it really fascinating that there's just this war against Christianity in the schools, but when it comes to the courts and prisons, it's like, well, you know, we'll let that happen there because, you know, they're beyond anything we can do to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's pretty sad.
It's a fascinating dichotomy.
I think America should wake up and smell the coffee. And they have no idea how lucky they are, how fortunate they are, and the freedom that we've got here. I think they just take it for granted. And they think it's just always going to be there. And I think they should travel to other countries if they think America's bad.
What was his time? What was it like in prison for him?
Well, I went down there and learned quickly. My church had missionaries down there, so we went down and hired interpreters because nobody speaks English, and found out that you could buy a cell and you could buy food, because what they serve you, nobody wants to eat. Only people who had no money at all ever ate what the prison made them, because they could care less. And it was pretty bad. And you locked yourself from the inside, not the outside. You locked yourself in your cell, and because it's the only way you could be safe, is if you locked yourself in your cell. And there was there was two Americans there. One got out, and then the other guy was still there when he left, who was a big drug dealer there. And he had a cell. As a matter of fact, he had three. And he put a tennis court out in front of his house. And it was really nice for him. They have girls coming in and out. One guy there had a wolf and walked around with a gun in his belt. And obviously he was somebody who was in charge. And, you know, as an American, you weren't very well liked. I can tell you that for sure.
How ironic. They all want to come here, but somebody gets in trouble there, and they, you know, we hate them. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
All right, so he had to lock himself from the inside, and that's because he was an American or because
everybody who had money put a lock on their cell and locked it from the inside. Not just him. Everybody did. That's just what they did there. I can't remember why. I can't remember why on earth they really did that, but that's what they did. They locked him from the inside, and there was a breakout when he was there, and he was engaged at the time, and the girl was there with her 12-year-old son, and they tried to take the boy. And the only thing that saved them is John's lock on a cell, and he locked the door and slammed it shut and locked the door. And at that, they stuck a gun through the little hole and shot all over, and it was on CNN. The big breakout. The guys did finally make it out, but not that night. A bunch of people got killed. And
if they were in a cell and somebody's shooting at them, how did they not get hit?
Because they were underneath the steel cell, underneath the bunk bed. They went underneath the bunk bed and they only shot a couple times and left because they realized that they weren't going to get in there. They were trying to scare him to open the door.
What did they want with the boy?
To walk out the front door. They knew with a 12-year-old American boy they'd let him. So instead, they went and locked themselves, I think, in the medical place. And somebody got shot, and it wasn't a pretty sight. The only ones who didn't wind up down there was John and his fiancée, because he
what
was smart enough to realize.
Brainless, all right, I'm just going to ask you a real pointed question here. What kind of brainless nitwit would become engaged to your son while he's in prison in Mexico City and not even come to trial yet? What a nitwit.
Well, you know, hey, there's all kinds of people who visit guys in jail all the time right here in America to some of the worst criminals in the world. You know, people who've killed their wives, has been proven. They got a whole lineup outside waiting to go visit them. So there's a lot of nitwits in the world. It wouldn't
that
have been me.
That is one of the funniest. So, I mean, I'm just flabbergasted. So, all right. Now, okay. So she would come, and they would, and the 12-year-old boy would there, and they would have, like, a conjugal visit?
Well, I don't think they did that with her son there. I mean, they had conjugal visits, not those two, but people. They had tents. They had hookers lined up out coming in there all the time. They could do anything they wanted to there. I mean, it was nothing like an American prison. It was filthy. It was dirty. It was scary. It was not safe.
What did John do all day long?
Drugs. What do you think people do in jail in Mexico? They do drugs. One of his roommates was from Germany, and he was there because he had people come from his country to Mexico, and he would kill them all and steal their identification, their money, their passports, and everything else, and go sell it. So that's who his roommate was. And he always wanted to sing to me and talk to me, and I'm like, whoa, get away from me. And then he had these horrible, haunting eyes, and he would just, like, follow around, and, well, why is your mom mad at me? And it was just creepy. But here this guy was, just killed people for a living. That's what he did.
It reminds me of Jørgen Vondersloot when you said those creepy eyes, haunty eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gross. And
yeah,
he was your son's roommate.
This guy was very scary. Very scary. It was not, if he didn't like you, he just, like, did away with you.
What happened to him, do you know?
Well, who cares? I don't know. He was still there. Because even
when
after
John
was
get in, out?
2001.
All right, so he essentially was in jail just about 10 years.
Yeah.
And when he came to trial,
his time
what
was
happened?
Up. When it came to trial, his time was up. He had 1 year that they sent him over to the when I went and demanded at the American Embassy, I had all these drug lords sign their name that they wouldn't give him drugs anymore, and he was had sold he'd sell everything. I'd take him and he had sold everything, and so I hired an interpreter because I didn't trust John to interpret for me, and went in there and I said, get all the drugs. You know, they thought I was going to pay them for their drugs, and I said, get them all in here. I want to talk to all of them. And so they all come in and sit down, and I said, okay, tell them they might as well just go ahead and kill John because I'm not going to pay him. And they all looked at me, oh, no, 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 because they all liked him. I said, well, you're killing him. Look at him. Why should I pay for you to kill him? Go ahead and kill him. And they didn't know quite what to do with me. They just kind of looked at me like, what? I said, go ahead. I'm not paying you. And they actually all signed a piece of paper. They actually all signed a piece of paper that they wouldn't sell him drugs anymore before I left.
How,
so I took it to the American.
How much money did you spend for him when he was in jail?
Probably $250,000, $300,000. He got real upset
when
with me
got,
when he was.
When he got out, did he have any saved or stashed from?
No. No.
So his operating motto was, you know, pay as you go, and he just blew through everything.
Make it. Well, that's what most people who sell drugs and do drugs do. They never save anything. The one guy that was there that was a big drug guy, one of the biggest America's ever known, and he said, oh, you can go to all my hotels. I said, why would I want to go to your hotels? are you kidding me? Oh, but I got hotels everywhere. And I said, I don't want to go to your hotels. It's okay. I'm not going to go and say, oh, I'm a guest of blah, blah, blah. No, thank you. It just isn't fun. So, but I took all those names to the American Embassy. It's the only reason he got a trial. Because at the time, they were trying to get money and become like America. I said, do you know how much I know you're not like America? I'm here like every 3 months, and I know you're nothing like America. And America's going to know by the time I'm done, because I'm going to go find Walter Jacobson and let him do a big, he was a big news guy in Chicago, and let him do a big spread on you. And so I took the names and handed them to him. And at the time, it was a woman who was at the head of the embassy, and she said, you know, they really signed their real names. And I said, well, how would I know? I can't read Spanish. And she said, you're lucky you're alive. She said, they signed all their names. And then one guy, several of the guys quit selling drugs. The one guy, John, came back and told me that after I left, he went and asked him for drugs, and he pulled out a baseball bat, and he said, I'm going to beat you for real. You make me look your mother in the eye and swear I'm not going to sell you drugs, and you come over here like a dog asking me for drugs. He said, I'm going to beat you because you're asking me for drugs.
So John had to go cold turkey to get clean, and that was, so now he'd be in his early 40s.
Yeah, he never did drugs again when he got, because when he finally got the trial and got him on the airplane back to Texas, and there's a prison right there on the border where they take the Americans to, and he had 1 year there that he had to finish. But he would have 9 months off if he did this whole boot camp thing for drugs. He never did another drug. He's completely clean. That was quite a miracle, too. I mean, he never did another drug.
What is he doing now?
Working. He's not doing drugs. And he's not selling drugs that I know of.
Did he marry that girl?
No, no. He broke up with her after they got back. Can you believe that?
Was she American or Spanish?
American.
She was an American girl.
Mm-hmm.
With a 12-year-old in Mexico City in a jail cell.
Mm-hmm.
With a breakout. My goodness. Whatever
mm-hmm.
happened to her?
Well, I don't know. She just kind of disappeared. Kind of disappeared, and he broke up with her, and she, instead of him breaking up with her, he broke up with her. You thought it would have been the other way around.
Wow. And so you had to fly down there every 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
Why that often?
Just because I thought that's what I needed to do.
And you're a mom.
And I'm a mom. And it keeps people on their toes. You know, it's kind of like if you put your parents in an old people's home and you never go there. That's the one they're going to abuse. But if you're there every week, they leave them alone. They knew I was coming. And they knew I was coming from America, and I usually walked in with a whole bunch of people. And then one family I met wound up going in and kind of mentoring him, and they were a wonderful family. They wouldn't let me stay at a hotel anymore, and we're still friends with them. We still talk to them. But it was quite an experience.
What a story.
Quite the tough love story.
Indeed. And, you know, the thing is that when people get hooked on these things, you say that's all they live for. They don't tell the truth. They'll slit your throat for, you know, the charm bracelet you've got so that they
mm-hmm.
can get one more hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a severe problem in our society. But we've run out of time for this. And, you know, Pam, thank you for for you know, for sharing this story. And my goodness, I mean, it just absolutely unreal. And so let me say, Pam, thank you. Stacy, thank you for being on the line. And God bless y'all. And God bless the United States of America. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.